And thank you guys for having me on again, by the way.
Wait until we make you sound like an asshole.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk with our friend David Elwin Traylor about holy wars and whether religion makes people more violent, or if maybe we're just really violent already and religion makes us worse.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick, joined as always by my co-host, Nick Glover.
Hey!
And the extremely cold Molly Glover.
Meow.
nobody's gonna get that, but that's okay.
That was
wearing a coat.
I thought it was funny. All right, so we are joined by our guest. We often have referred to him on this podcast as David America.
Ta-da-da.
Or David Elwin Traylor. Hi, David. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
We are excited to have you here. Now, David, you, as our listeners would probably assume, are an atheist.
Yes, I am.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about why are you an atheist? How did you come to atheism? Were you raised in a faith tradition?
No, I mean, we're all born atheists.
My parents are both English. I don't know. Those of you who know me as Captain America from Convergence might find that as a bit of a shock, but like I'm actually a first generation American.
No, that makes sense.
That's exactly Captain America.
I'm also
would be better as if your parents were Irish, actually.
Yeah. almost. I'm almost there. My parents never raised me with any particularly huge slant on any particular faith, because they're both Church of England, and, you know, Church of England occupies that Eddie Izzard joke of, you know, Church of England, cake or death. It's a very tame denomination. There's not a whole lot of fervor there.
Background radiation?
Yeah.
Divorce is for everyone.
Exactly.
I've been to a Church of England service, and they are boring as dirt.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Really, but their clergy are so nice.
they are.
Are they like the Unitarians of England, kind of?
Oh, God, yeah. Pretty much. I mean, they have Unitarians in England, obviously, but, like, it's... they're very, like... When my grandfather passed away at his funeral, I had a very nice chat with a vicar, as they call them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, discussing where the term vicar came from and everything. He and I talked about more just general outlooks on life, and not a single Bible quote was mentioned. Like, these are people who are very live and let live. And
do you think he picked up the vibe that it wasn't your bag, and that's why he didn't really like go to the God stuff? Like,
maybe. But the thing is, like, him never having brought it up, that I guess struck me as odd for a couple of minutes, but like, he was interesting enough, and I think that this was somebody who I think wanted to do good.
Sure.
And saw that as just his natural way of doing good. Maybe his father was a vicar and that kind of thing, and that was the way in which he wanted to transmit decency.
They can marry?
That kind of thing. I think they can.
Yeah, they can.
Last I checked.
Yeah, and the Church of England is formed when Henry VIII split from the Catholics.
Because he wanted to get split Anne's head from her shoulders.
Right. that was after the Church of England. Yeah. He wanted to marry Anne Boleyn. He wanted to divorce his current wife, marry Anne Boleyn. So he formed the Church of England and split from the Catholic Church. And there were all sorts of fun
declared
things
himself
he did.
Head of the church.
He went around to all the Catholic abbeys in England, and he, you know, completely burned them to the ground and stole all their money. And you know. So I mean, there's a lot of really positive
religion's
stuff.
Hilarious.
Well, you see, I'm sure, like, okay, so yeah, he wanted to get divorced and marry someone else and whatever. But like, the fact that he stole all of the church's money. Mm. I mean, the church was a significant...
I mean, they weren't using
it. They still have money, so not all their money.
Well, right. But I mean, all the churches there.
Stole all their money. Stole all their money in England.
It was a significant amount of wealth. And I mean, clearly there are other motivations other than just, I wanted to divorce and get married. there was also, I mean, oh, and on top of that, I get all this money and more power.
He just hates child molesters.
Yes. And then you get in England, you get for several years, you've got the fights between the Catholics and the Protestants.
Yeah.
And whoever happens to be on the throne, whatever religion they are, they're pretty much killing everybody who's the other religion.
Yeah.
Well, that's just about. Yeah.
All the usurper and all that. The Baroque era stuff of trying to put a Catholic on the throne, the William of Orange and all that.
Yeah, not to mention that, you know, when you're living in a country that has decided to say no to the Pope anymore, and you decide that you're only gonna be subservient to the King of England, who's also the head of the British monarch, the English monarch is always head of the Church of England.
That's right.
And if you have a country with a bunch of people who have decided that, who I guess you have decided that their ultimate allegiance lies to the Pope and not your king, that raises issues of loyalty and excuses for violence.
Therefore, beheadings.
Yeah. Real quick, though, can you just imagine the giant balls it takes in that time period to go, the Pope speaks with God's voice, and you go, nah.
Nah,
I don't think so.
Are you sure?
That's Henry VIII for you.
But also, like, I mean, an island nation, they had that going for him. I mean, France couldn't have pulled the same thing at that time. No. Neither could have Italy, even though they're a peninsula.
There's a good movie called A Man for All Seasons.
Yes,
based on a play. Robert Shaw, who's the sea captain in Jaws, plays the King of England. It's a fascinating movie, and it's a lot about the religious war that's going on in England when Henry VIII is king.
Oh yeah,
and it involves Sir Thomas More, who's made to look like a really heroic dude because they don't point out the part about him being a judge who burned heretics at the stake.
Sure. He's just
like loyal to Catholicism, and he looks like he's super peaceful and all nice.
Sure, but,
as a humanist, I think. Strangely
enough,
didn't have the track record.
At the same time, the Protestants had like the Calvinists and shit like that who were. I mean, they weren't exactly nonviolent.
No, I'm not excusing anybody involved.
Yeah. I think the like 15th to 17th or maybe 18th century, like a little bit more than the Baroque era, with the formation of the Church of England and the Jacobites and the fucking Calvinists and. Yeah. And which religious people left there to come here and to, like, you know, we want to be religious dickheads. We don't want your religious dickheadery here. Well, fine, we'll go over to America and be religious dickheads there.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the people that kind of founded our country.
We got the people with their nut perpetually in a vice.
Yeah.
Oddly is getting us into, we didn't really talk too much about what got David into atheism, but we're kind of getting into the topic that we were going to steer into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we are.
Which is the idea of holy war and religious violence and that sort of stuff. So I don't know if we'll get back to where David came to atheism, but who really fucking cares? Let's talk about holy wars.
It comes down to a camp. All right, so
let's talk about holy wars. So tell us why you were thinking about holy wars, Dave.
Well, it stems from arguments I've had with people, like roommates, I lived in Seattle for about 6 years, and for a good majority of that, I lived in this art loft with a bunch of people who I found were way more liberal than I was. Like, I'm pretty liberal, but they're more so. You know, we would have...
That's because they're artists and they're free.
Clearly. Very free. You have no idea how free they were. No, but we would talk about current events every now and then, you know, if there was violence in the Middle East, you know.
If.
There was violence in the Middle East. We would often disagree about how much religion played a role in it.
In the Middle East.
Yeah, well... Specifically relating to, you know, Al-Qaeda, acts of terrorism, I'd hear about another suicide bomb, or I'd hear about...
So you were living there from, like, because you moved back here in 2013.
Yeah.
So you were living there from, like, 2007 to 2013. So, like...
So
the entire time, the United States has... boots on the ground,
right?
Afghanistan and Iraq,
and
so
it's just about
not too far after. I mean, you have to realize 2007 still wasn't that long after the towers fell. Seems a lot longer
now.
You
were there from like when Obama was running for office to
Senator Obama
through most of his presidency,
a
good portion of his. At least his first term.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, I was there to see the war in Iraq ultimately try and wind down. You know. if you can call that winding down.
At this point, we have like 90% of the troops out.
Yeah.
Of, yeah, it's
war in Afghanistan was officially declared over, yeah, I think, just the other day.
We did not send more troops when the Iraq-Syria stuff happened. We sent bombs.
Yeah.
And so, drones.
Air support.
So one, yeah. one of the things you mentioned was Israel-Palestine.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I hear an argument a lot that, well, it's obviously there's religion as a component, but more like this long, the relationship between the two is more of the problem. The cultural differences, the encroachment, the grudge.
Yeah, everybody has a very long memory.
Right, and it's the grudge more than the religion.
Your children's children have been raised to hate Palestine. Your children's children's children have been raised to hate Israel.
You killed my brother, so I'm going to kill your brother.
You tell
horror
stories.
Now you're going to get me back for killing your brother.
The honor killing cycle that is just endless, you know, that kind of thing.
And is that driven by religion, or is it...
It's
driven by a lot of things. My wife is fond of pointing out that the human race, one of the things that makes us unique is in the animal kingdom, if I take over your hill because I become the dominant animal and this hill is now my hill, my children's children's children won't give a fuck about that hill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think a big problem is that in the Middle East, and we literally cannot understand what it's like here to have this, but in the Middle East, your religion and your culture... they're disparate, but they're so intertwined. Like, you know, you have people talk about how I'm not a religious Jew, but I'm a cultural Jew because I can't not be Jewish. But at the same time, I'm a Jewish atheist or whatever.
Yeah.
You can get that. We don't really get, there's not really like cultural Christianity here where you can be an atheist who goes to church because you're a cultural Christian. I mean,
it can't be cultural Islam because if you're in an Islam state, then that's apostasy.
And where you're born,
it's your government, it's your culture.
We have freedom from religion as much as we may not feel it.
Yep.
We really do. I mean, there is no government coming in and making sure that you are going to church every Sunday or whatever.
And you won't spend 20 years in jail for a tweet. That kind of thing.
So it makes it hard to say that it's not religion or it is, and it's not culture or it is.
Because you can't separate the equation.
But even when you have cultural violence, and this was my counter argument, because oftentimes they would say, my roommates at the time, they would say that, it's because we've been bombing them for so many years, it's because we've been interfering with their lives and their culture so many years that, you know, they're fighting back against us or they're fighting back against Israel, that kind of thing.
And
what I would come back with is, okay, you can motivate people to fight and kill and die for nationalism, for cultural grudges, for
resources.
You know, for resources, that
for
kind
religion.
Of thing. But nothing will motivate somebody to the degree that you have people going on buses with rat poison in their pockets and nails and, you know, explosives and sacrificing themselves in such a number if they weren't promised reward in the afterlife. You know, if you didn't feel like you were commanded by the ultimate creator of the universe.
That's more of it. Not necessarily reward. I think it's more if you didn't think that you had your marching orders from a higher power. And that goes
for the highest power.
And that goes for people shooting abortion doctors and bombing abortion clinics. That goes for people burning down mosques and spray painting temples.
I disagree in part. Terrorism is a tactic.
Mm-hmm.
It is an unconventional form of warfare
mm-hmm.
that you resort to when your opponent has more means and resources than you, and your only hope is to turn to terrorism.
Yep.
That's
asymmetrical warfare.
Right. That's how you strike back. That's how you bloody the nose of
mm-hmm.
someone bigger than you.
Mm-hmm.
Is you switch to terrorism. Terrorism isn't inherently religious.
No.
Mm. Plenty of people have resorted to terrorism or organizations or groups or peoples. I wouldn't even necessarily say that all of the IRA conflicts were inherently religiously motivated, though there was a religious component.
It's a religious divide. It's a religious divide, but the religious divide was political in
mm-hmm.
that the ruling party in Northern Ireland was run by England, and the ruler, and that's primarily
not represent the people weren't represented.
That's, COE versus Catholics,
and that's primarily Protestant, which is the minority in Ireland, because Ireland is predominantly a Catholic nation. Right. So you're using the minority to control the majority.
Yeah, it's a very South Africa kind of situation.
Yes, it's occupied land, as far as the people who live there were concerned.
I think what David's point is that there's and maybe we'll make it so it's not such a hyperbole absolute. Not that nothing, but very little can motivate a person to do terroristic things or to commit violence, like feeling that they have God on their side, that they are filled with the righteous justice.
Absolute morality.
Absolute morality. Yes.
I'm never gonna make the argument that religion is the sole cause of a lot of things. Like, for instance, you mentioned terrorism being a tactic. Like Gavrilo Princip, the guy who the Serbian guy who started the First World War by assassinating the Archduke of Austria-Hungary. This is a guy who did so purely for political reasons, because he said, you know, Sarajevo should be Slavic, you know, that kind of thing, and which was an act of terrorism, which brought us into the 20th century,
right?
But you know, if how worse would it have been? I ask myself if it was a group of priests organizing this, or if somebody said, "You have the blessing of this particular church," or you have God on your side doing this.
I don't know if the end result would have been any different.
Organize a bunch of people to fly airplanes into the Twin Towers if you don't use God as a motivator?
Yes.
Or a God stand-in like David Koresh or something, where they're saying, I am your Messiah, but which is still a God thing anyway.
My favorite description for that, by the way, Tim, is I've heard people describe them as faith-guided missiles.
But I
mean, that's a good point, because whenever you hear about truly horrible things, they're usually either very personal, like this guy raped and murdered 30 women because they all reminded him of his mother, or because he had a problem with a stripper ex-girl, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's personal, or it's religious. Like, this person was, you know, murdering abortion doctors because they felt they were doing God's work. It really does seem like it's that passion that people bring with them that inspires, I mean, anger and love and violence and passion are all mixed in that strong emotion.
The one thing that I wonder about in this kind of a situation, you know, the dude who rapes and murders 30 women because they remind him of an ex-girlfriend, there's a situation where it's somebody who is clearly already, they've had a break from reality. They're psychotic. But I don't think you can organize a bunch of guys to fly a bunch of airplanes into buildings if they're psychotic. I don't think I can define, as much as they're mass murderers, they, to me, don't feel like they were psychotic. They feel like they were manipulated using God.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the God delusion, as it were.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it reminds me of something that Sam Harris said in a debate with William Lane Craig, and it went down something like this, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said that you're going to... No, sorry, let me... Sorry, let me backtrack and try to remember exactly what he said. But if you believe that saying a few Latin words over your pancakes is going to turn them into the body of Elvis Presley, you've lost your mind. But if you think the same thing about a wafer and the body of Jesus, you're just a Catholic. And that
it's a shared delusion.
Exactly, and that religion will get people in the thousands to believe what only a lunatic could believe on their own.
We've discussed that before on here, how it's why is it, you know, it's the whole, you know, why is it any, you know, when I was hearing and seeing things that had nothing to do with God, you know, that was me being insane. But if it's someone said that they were hearing the voice of, you know, and then you get this on the other side, I know some devout Christians who have said things like, how do we know that Jesus hasn't come back and isn't locked away in a psych ward somewhere? I mean, and it's so, and to them, even they see that like, it looks crazy, and it's...
You think God would be able to send a convincing messenger, though, right?
I mean,
you think that he could pull that off. And
such
I think,
a dick.
It's interesting because Sam Harris and Bill Maher got into a bit of hot water with Ben Affleck, because they were talking about basically issues with Islam and what Islam inspires in people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Ben Affleck said it was racist, and I have actually a huge problem with what Affleck said, because they were talking about religion.
Islam is not a race.
Yeah, right. Islam is not a race, it is a religion, and a religion is not above...
You can be an Arab and not be Islam, and you can be an Islam who isn't an Arab.
Yeah. And Islam is not in itself above criticism.
No, it's certainly not.
And to suggest that criticizing Islam is Islamophobic or racist is incorrect. It's only a problem if that's the only religion that you are criticizing.
Yeah, and nor is it racist to say that we tiptoe around Islam more than we do other faiths.
It's like, true. It's because there's a proven history of declaring people who are vocal against the religion as enemies of the religion and putting prices on their heads.
I mean,
fucking Salman Rushdie.
It's the same reason we weren't supposed to wear our scrubs home from the abortion clinic. It's the same reason. We weren't supposed to, because they said people will follow you, and someone did follow me. But like they'll learn your name, they'll learn your face, they will figure out where you live. When I was working at Planned Parenthood, a clinic in like Ohio got bombed to the ground, and it was, you know, they sent out a memo to everyone saying, be double careful, walk in twos, like to make sure that you're doubling up on your guards. And it's the same kind of thing, because these people can't be fucking reasoned with. Yeah. And so we have to tiptoe around it, because it's not worth someone dying.
So if the problem is the people can't be reasoned with, mm-hmm. and I think it's clear, at least from our perspective, that the religious...
Fanatics. Zealot.
Are not reasonable people. They're more prone to not reasonable actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think you can get that degree of fervor about other things, such as patriotism, political allegiance.
People who beat and burn down towns, sports team loses. Absolutely. You can certainly
inspire fanaticism outside religion. I think a great example is Pol Pot, who is not.
Mm-hmm,
Everybody's like, hey, look at what this atheist did. It's not about atheism. What he used was a very specific, fucked up philosophy.
Yes.
And he managed to convince a whole bunch of other people he was right. And those people went out and did horrible, horrible things.
Well, Hitler. I mean. Yep. That was in the name of patriotism. That was in the name of national and ethnic pride.
Think of all the people at the Jonestown compound, if instead of killing themselves, had been told that they should go out and kill four people each. I mean, think about that kind of absolute certainty that what you're doing is right, that you're willing to take your own life and then make it murder instead of suicide. So, I mean, you're absolutely right, Tim. I mean, there's ways to inspire it outside of religion. It's just religion seems to be the hack.
Absolutely.
Religion is a good, that's a good term. It's a hack.
And the question is the success rate higher because of religion, because of the level of authority that's being foisted on you? Like I said, like one thing when a president commands you to do something. It's one thing when a community leader or a revolutionary leader commands you to do something. But it's another thing when you think your commands are coming from the creator of the universe.
Yeah.
Beyond the efficacy, is there an ethical difference between a president telling you to go kill someone in the name of your country and a religious leader telling you to go kill someone in the name of your God? Is there an ethical difference?
See, and I would argue there is, because God's not real. and your country
but they don't know that.
But, like, I think it comes down to, like, if it's just or not.
I don't think there's an ethical reason for anyone to tell me to kill somebody who isn't trying to harm me personally. And I think the concept of, but that's just, I don't have
I think that's that's complicated.
I don't have a strong concept of nationalism. I never have. Yeah. I've never understood this whole, like, this is my group and I'm going to kill anybody who's not in my group. And how dare you come at my group? I mean, I admit, I was pretty pissed at the Shriners that year at Convergence, but, like, I didn't want to murder any of them. It's the year that our group was encroached upon by another group.
They
double booked the hotel, and so we had to share space with the Shriners. Now, that is the closest I've ever felt to, no, you're bad, and we're good.
A lot of the Shriners were vocally derogatory.
But if someone from CONCOM had said, we're going to go beat up the Shriners and make sure they know they're not welcome here, I would not have done that, even though I felt passionately about.
Are you saying that year Convergence was the Twin Cities nerds Israel-Palestine?
It was. And the Gaza Strip was the lobby.
Did they launch an assault in their tiny cars?
they launched an assault on my senses.
Actually, the assault was motorcycles, but it's
true.
We're running out of time.
Wait, are you saying we're not going to be able to solve the concept of holy war in 30 minutes?
No!
Damn it!
I had such high hopes, you guys!
God damn it, David!
We still haven't gotten to how David came to atheism, so I guess whatever. We'll have to have him back some other time. But
came on atheism.
This is a good conversation. Certainly, I want to encourage anybody who's got some thoughts about this to feel free to comment. But right now, we got to move on to five questions. It turns out, David, he sent his five questions in like a year ago.
He sent them in. I think it was before we actually knew him very well. Pretty sure he had just come to a couple
visiting
of,
here from
you'd
Seattle.
Come to a couple of Ville shows, and that was it.
I visited Minnesota whenever I could. I usually could only come for Christmas and con. Those were the times that were really important
Christmas
for me to come
Christmas.
Back. Christmas in July, as it were. I sent those before I even moved back, and then it was so cool. It was so cool to hear that.
Christmas and the birth of our Savior, Connie.
So that means
does that make Chris Jones like
God?
Immaculate conceiver?
Yeah, he's
Michelangelo.
He's the Virgin Mary. Chris Jones is a virgin. Really.
Indeed.
So you have five questions for me?
I do have five questions for you.
We would be happy to have you read them off, please.
Cool.
What's your first question?
Relating to the five questions I asked you guys, relating to the five questions that you asked me, I think I proclaimed my love for Shakespeare quite a bit.
Yes.
Yeah, he's okay.
So my first question is, what is your favorite Shakespeare quote? And it could be a full quote, or it could just be like a phrase that we use that comes from Shakespeare, because our language is littered with so many
references. Ooh, I got this.
References.
I got this.
Go
I got this one. And this
Ooh,
one,
got
this
it.
One, as an atheist, this one rings so true. The fault is not in our stars, it is in ourselves.
Yes.
That's good.
From
like,
said by Cassius to Brutus in Julius Caesar, I believe.
That is true. That is true. But I
heard.
I think that's a great.
I totally know mine, but it's not because Shakespeare. It's because the Venture Brothers.
Oh yeah.
So there's a scene where the monarch is during the yard sale episode. He's in the Venture compound, and he's like, "Oh, this is great! Like, I can do whatever I want. I'm gonna fuck with Dr. Venture." He's like, "I'm gonna go into his bathroom and I'm gonna like take a huge dump and I'm just gonna leave it there and not even flush." And so he comes out of the bathroom to talk to Dr. Girlfriend at this point, she is, and she says like, you know, "Hey, what went on in there?" And he says, "It was full of sound and fury, but signifying nothing."
I'm gonna answer a serious one, and then my playful one being that Nick and I have a lot of secret twin language because we're married, and one of the things is just randomly, well, it just comes up with the "Do you bite your thumb at me, sir?" Like, "Nay, but I do bite my thumb, sir." Like, but for all sorts of things, like, "Do you shake your butt at me, sir?" "No, but I do shake my butt, sir." Like,
a lot
with the cats. With
"Do
everything.
You shake your cat paw?
Do you
at
meow
me?
At me, sir?" "Nay, but I do meow, sir." Like, just
love that. Love
when
that.
I always loved the body hand of the dial is upon the prick of noon, because that just cracked me up when I was in high school. It was so obvious, and there it was, but. My favorite, ever since I was about 14, is from Romeo and Juliet.
Yep.
And it's, "Doubt thou that the stars are fire, doubt that the sun doth move, doubt truth to be a liar, but never doubt my love." Yep. And I love that, because it's like, you can doubt science and the natural world around you and the things that you are able to observe with your own eyes, but don't ever think I don't love you.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Aww.
I know.
That's so sweet.
Mine has to be, in terms of sheer comedy factor, from Titus Andronicus. There's a line
Funny play.
Yeah.
It's fucking hilarious.
Oh, God. It is legit one of my favorites. But there's a point in which Aaron, the Moor, the black guy, who has had an affair with Tamara, who is now Empress of Rome, and her child comes out to be a black child, and one of her other sons says, "You have undone our mother," and then he says, "Villain, I have done thy mother." So Shakespeare slutty mom joke. That's the one I choose off the top of my head today. God knows there's gonna be other ones.
No,
that means nobody knows, of course.
Question number two.
What US president do you think was possibly a secret atheist?
Bill Clinton.
See, him and Hillary actually attended church more than Reagan.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They went to church every weekend.
They're Southern.
Were they overcompensating?
They're from Arkansas.
Was it culture or was it religion?
Going back to the question.
I'm I'm going to say Teddy Roosevelt.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I think Teddy Roosevelt believed too much in himself to believe in a God.
I was going to say Franklin Roosevelt, but for different reasons, because I have a feeling that after being crippled with polio and dealing with all the war stuff, that it would have been hard to believe in God after all that. And it would have been, and maybe he didn't think to himself, I'm an atheist, but I bet he had a lot of doubting moments more than most.
Maybe Bill is a legit Christian, because whenever I hear him talk, he's never talking about God. He's talking about what people can do to make the world better for people.
Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter's legit Christian. No doubt.
Jimmy Carter's legit, no question.
So maybe in that regard, I would say, I hope he's an atheist because he seems like such a reasonable person, but actually he's just one of the good ones.
You know, honestly, in modern era, I would actually say the one most likely to have been an atheist was Reagan, because he talked the God talk all the time, but he didn't go to church except basically Christmas and a cut. Huh. So it was like, and I still don't know that he was, but
plus he was an actor. I mean,
he was, but he really, knew,
they're all
he
liars
knew that
anyway, right?
Reagan knew to use Christianity as a powerful weapon to get what he wanted,
especially against the USSR, which was an atheist country.
Yeah,
and or at the time, like an atheist bloc, as it were. Sure. Like religion was not welcome. So
yeah. So, but I still go with Teddy Roosevelt. Okay. Anyway, question number three.
Oh, question number three. Which religion has the best hats? Because as we all know, religion is just an arms race and hat technology.
It's not Judaism. I think the yarmulke looks dopey, so I'm not going to allow that personally. The mitres in Catholicism, they've got a lot of nice hats
they
in
do.
Catholicism. They really do.
Gilded hats.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not the Rasta dread sack. It's not that.
Dudism just has the long, unwashed hair.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I guess I'm going to go Flying Church of the Spaghetti Monster because they have the colander.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
So,
Ramen.
Yeah. I think, like, a monk hood. Ooh. Like, a hood is super utilitarian.
Yeah, yeah.
A hood can look badass and villainous. Yeah, like, I think I'm going to go with some sort of, like, a, we'll say, like, Belgian Trappist monk getup.
Okay.
Right. Awesome. Right. Okay. Acceptable.
Awesome.
Question number, what are we on? Four?
Four, yes.
Four.
You're transported back in time, and you're dropped in the Colosseum. What melee weapon do you pick to defend yourself?
Ooh.
I would pick something light because I'm weak.
Something light with reach, like a spear or like a sling to go full symbolism.
Does it have to be period appropriate weaponry?
As long as it's a melee weapon.
All right.
Okay. I'm gonna go with two small hand axes.
Ooh.
Because I'm little
like tomahawks.
But I'm little and fast. And if it's in the Colosseum, chances are I'm gonna be able to like scrabble around. Mm-hmm. And I'm quick, but I have arm strength. But I think anything two handed, it's gonna take me too long to move it. So with these, I can get in and I can like chop tendons and I can like really like do some damage to cripple my opponents. So I can get them down, because if I can get them down on the ground, I can probably end up killing them.
Okay.
And that's if I don't die right away because I trip and fall on my own hand axes.
You heard it here. Molly prefers them to go down.
Oh yeah, I like them to go down real fast. Like just get right down there.
I think,
why are we wasting time? I have a meeting.
I think maybe like a. Not like the full length, but like I think a horseman's pick.
Okay.
Something that's like a hammer on one side and a pick on the other.
Or like a war hammer.
Yeah, right.
Okay,
exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Just so that you get, because I'm strong enough and big enough where wielding something that would be crushing, like a hammer, would be fine.
Yeah.
But then like if you're up against someone who has some sort of armor or whatever, you have a pick to get in there.
True. Not only that, but the hammer can crack them open like a lobster.
Yeah. I think that's the way I would.
You can come
up
down from the top.
Yeah.
You get the height reach.
Since the rules say specifically a melee weapon, I'm gonna pick a lightsaber.
Ooh.
Oh, damn it.
Because probably nobody would fight me. They just freak the fuck out and run away.
To be fair, in the Star Wars role playing universe, the lightsaber skill is a separate skill for melee.
Also, I think You would, you know what would happen? You would Luke Skywalker yourself too. You would look down into the lightsaber.
Dude, can you imagine? Tim, can you imagine the Romans? You pick it up and it goes, and they're just like,
and that's when, like, they unload crossbow bolts into you. That's and not now Romans have a they... lightsaber and fucking the world
Tim
ends.
Opens a line. But the I lightsaber, the
if I had the lightsaber, I'd be able to use the force and block all the crossbow bolts.
Yeah. Force is a melee weapon. Come
the
on.
The force is inherent in lightsaber use, though. Just... You have to be able to control the force. Trust me.
They might just drop everything and worship you as, like, a servant of Jupiter or something.
Yeah, they would.
Yeah, they probably would.
I have lightning in my hands!
Look, the point is, if I'm in the Colosseum in Rome, I am 5 minutes from death, guaranteed.
Yeah.
So I might as well have a cool fucking weapon.
What color
is your lightsaber, Tim?
Purple. Purple's fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Racist.
He just doesn't want to pick between dark side and light side. That's all.
No.
Actually, I'd prefer green, but... All right. Last question, number five.
Last question is your favorite sandwich accompaniment. So, what do you prefer to eat your sandwiches with? Fries, sometimes chips, or is it a side soup, or does it depend on the sandwich?
It really does depend on the sandwich, but I would say if you're asking for the most universal, I would go for potato chips.
Agreed.
Because I can put potato chips in the sandwich.
Yeah.
I can eat potato chips separately.
Yeah.
They make a good, like, they're, like when you're like, oh, I don't think I'm able to finish this sandwich, you put the chips inside, and then you got the crunch.
I think, back in the day, my jam was getting dill pickle chips from Subway with my sandwich and putting them in the sandwich.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's perfect. It's like pickles, but also potato chips.
Right?
You get that, in the a sandwich. Good crunch.
Yeah.
I used to make tuna melts with potato chips all the time. Crunch.
But I think, I think if I'm getting like especially a deli sandwich, my favorite accompaniment is the spear of pickle that comes with the sandwich. That is my dessert. That is, like, the best thing to eat after you've finished a big sandwich.
That's the exclamation point on the end of the meal.
I will give runner-up status to coleslaw.
Coleslaw's good. Mm-hmm. I like coleslaw.
You can put that on a sandwich, too.
If it's if it's tomato soup or something, or if it's grilled cheese or something like that, it'll be tomato soup.
Yeah, because
you're not an idiot. It's warmer, tastier ketchup. Why would you not want that? It's like, come on.
Yeah.
What do you want? You want chicken noodle with your grilled cheese sandwich? Mother, please.
Mother, someone who suggests that gets called bitch.
Yeah. She makes a good point. All right, so if you would like to answer David's five questions yourself, feel free to comment on our website. If you have any comments about Holy War, did we get everything wrong about religion in this episode? Probably. We don't know fuck about religion.
It's far too complicated to sum up in a half hour.
Yeah, like I dare say you don't know either. So there.
Shots
fired.
Comment anytime you want. David, you are working on a podcast. We ought to let you mention it.
Certainly am. Which relates to why I chose today's topic. It's going to be called Fightcast. It's going to be a podcast all about armed conflict, especially from a stage combatant point of view. Sometimes I'll be talking about awesome fights I see in films. Sometimes it'll be more of a military history kind of thing. Sometimes it'll be about the psychology of combat itself. But,
so like the nerdiest possible ways you could have something be about fighting.
Oh, just about, yeah.
How much can we pay you to get in a bar fight and then podcast about it?
Yeah.
Think about that. I'm interested.
I see a dialogue.
I was just thinking. I see
counterpoint, Molly. Would it be cheaper just to pay someone else to punch him in a bar?
Ooh.
So you're saying that was you that one time. Damn it!
That's the Fightcast. We will definitely have a link to it in the show notes.
When it exists.
Working on it right now. It's in progress.
We'll bring it up on our Facebook page and our Twitter and everything like that as soon as we have all that good stuff to do.
And the dark souls of our minds, which we howl into your telephone.
We don't have souls.
Souls of our minds?
Sounds like someone's looking for a visit from the black bags.
So, thanks for listening. Please follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and tell us how awesome we are on iTunes, because really we need your validation to make our lives
or how terrible we are.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So, whatever.
And send us pictures of your dogs and cats.
What?
I don't know. I like to get pictures of people's dogs and cats.
Why not?
As long as we're asking for stuff.
Wait. Can we start
the fluffier the better, goddammit.
How about, like, cats on Bibles? Cats on religious texts?
Cats on religious texts.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Yep. We want to start a meme of cats on religious texts.
Oh, that would be the cutest and most controversial thing ever.
Send us pictures of your pets on religious texts.
That's what we want. So I'm glad we talked long enough to get that into the podcast.
Yep.
We will be back next week. Have a happy atheist week.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year! Happy 2015.
Or whatever.
More! Huh. Good God, y'all, what is it good for? Forcing religion on other people?
Say it again! We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Behold, there is a place by me, and thou shalt stand upon a rock, and it shall come to pass, while my glory passeth by, that I will put thee in a clift of the rock, and will cover thee with my hand while I pass by. And I will take away mine hand, and thou shalt see my back parts.